What's up, Goal Kids? Welcome back to another episode of the Ghoulish Gallery with me, Tasha, your host, and Journey might actually not participate this time. He's being good. Each week, I have a guest from a different location here to tell us about their local spooks, haunted places, cryptids, urban legends, etc. And this week, we have speculative writer Lindsay McLeod, all the way from Scotland. So thank you for making the time to sort this out because time zones are the biggest pain in the neck ever.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me. And this is actually a much more pleasant time than the Apex interview I did last week, which was at 1 o'clock in the morning my time. So that was really brutal. It hurt a little bit. It
Horrible.
hurt all of my internal organs. So
Oh, I can only imagine, like just trying to function enough to do an interview at that time of day. I wouldn't be able to do
yeah, I'm not even sure if it was really me in the interview or all of the caffeine that I had myself
it. That is so valid. So, in terms of like spooky thing, is that something that's always interested you, or did that kind of develop later on, or?
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, Scotland has a lot of really interesting, like, mythology and folklore. There's always dreadful things dragging themselves out of the sea, trying to seduce somebody or murder somebody or do something. It's a place that is really steeped in kind of old myths and things. But there's also been very real things happened caused by very real people. We did have capital punishment here for, like, obviously up until about kind of the late 1800s, I think. And then we abolished it, thankfully. But there have been, as I live in Edinburgh, and it's one of those places that, as it became, like a proper capital city and expanded, as did the population, and with that comes a lot more crime, and people get started getting creative with their crime, and it all becomes quite interesting. So whenever tourists come here, we're like, oh, okay, like, what do you want to see first? There's crazy stuff that happened here. One of my friends lives right above. There's a place in the middle of kind of town near the castle called the Grass Market, which is a popular place for tourists to go because it's kind of the most Scottishy in terms of, like, with the way the buildings look, and you can see the castle from there. And my friend, he lives above one of the pubs. It's called The Last Drop, and The Last Drop, it has two meanings to the name, because it was just outside where one of the gallows used to stand. So it was the last drop, as in that would be the last thing they were doing, but also it was the last drop because that was where they were allowed to have their last beer before they were hung.
Oh,
So
wow.
real dark, but also people clearly had a bit of a sense of humor about it as well. You
Yeah.
have to have, I think,
Oh,
at that.
absolutely.
So yeah, there's something about that I find really interesting about kind of, like, the ways in which the human mind, like, for the supernatural, creates things and interprets the way the world works in order to kind of explain things to ourselves. And I'm also really interested in, like, the ways in which humans will stoop to depravities in the face of need, and sometimes just in the face of, sure, I have an urge, let's
Yeah.
go try it out,
There's nothing going on tonight. What should I get into?
Exactly. There's not, at times there has not always been a lot to do in Scotland. So, I mean, from a nation who brought you the bagpipe, which is, really, what can we do with this part of the animal? I don't know, let's blow some air into it and make music. Like, you can't trust a people like that. They'll do anything. So yeah, there's some interesting things. One of the people who was hanged, I feel particularly sorry for. He was a young student at the university, and he once made the joke, which was something like, the weather was very bad, and he said something like, how Edinburgh could not be, it could not be close to hell, because hell would be at least be bloody warm. And they hanged him for that because it was like they said it was blasphemous. He argued that on account of his tender years, I think he was only about 19, and that it had been in fact a joke, that and the judge that he got was just a real hard ass, and he ended up being hanged for it, which I thought was a real shame, because firstly he wasn't wrong, and also come on man, it was a joke, like don't be known as the joke. So yeah.
Oh yeah, that's one of those things that definitely makes you think twice about just kind of letting loose and like having a good time with the weather. Because if you don't make jokes about it, mm-hmm. you got to find a silver lining somewhere. So
exactly, and then I think from that point on, sentiment changed, and now all we do is joke about the weather. So I'm like, oh, you died. You know, you just were born too early. This guy, right. You know, I'm like, if you'd been born 50 years later, everyone would have found you really funny. And you'd right. still be alive.
It would have gone so differently.
Yeah, you had a good life. But no, just I feel bad for him.
It definitely always brings up that debate of like, are the supernatural things bigger mm-hmm. monsters, or are people bigger monsters? Because we're capable of some pretty horrible things.
Oh, for sure. And I think, like, you know, a lot of the things that people have come up with over the years, like, you know, the myth of the Selkie, which is like the seal that, you know, comes up onto shore and kind of unzips its skin, and it's actually a beautiful woman. And you can capture her as long as you steal the skin and never let her find it. But if she ever finds her skin, she will go back to the sea and leave you. And, you know, you can also get male Selkies as well. But it's like how many women were running away from their terrible husbands, and the husbands were like, oh yeah, well actually, you know, Karen was a Selkie, like you didn't know that, but like right. it was a whole thing, like she didn't leave me because like I'm great personally and it's like not my fault, but like yeah, she just went back to the sea, that's a whole thing, like nothing to do with me, I definitely never beat her or drank too much, everything's fine, like I'm fine.
I feel like there are still people that probably use that today.
Yeah, like, you know, he turned it to be a Selkie, like it's just yeah, it's a thing, it happens. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. And so in that same kind of vein, do you know about the serial killers, the most famous serial killers in Edinburgh?
I have seen lots of documentaries and stuff, so names might be familiar, but I don't 100% guarantee that.
Okay, so they were called Burke and Hare.
That does not sound familiar.
Okay. Really? So Burke and Hare, and again, we'll be coming back to this weird Scottish sense of humor in certain moments in this.
Love it.
It's not quite exactly clear how it started, but it looks as if, because at the time, because Edinburgh was a thriving capital, and also the university here had become really, really well known for turning out like philosophers and mathematicians and scientists of kind of all descriptions, but specifically also doctors. There's a surgeon's museum here where you can go, like Darwin came here, you know, it was a hive, it was a bustling metropolis. It was basically like you were in Edinburgh or London or Paris. Those were kind of the places to be. If you wanted to be like in the most like contemporary knowledge and soaking that up from your peers and from the staff. And the problem at the time was that there was a shortage of cadavers. Because, you know, even despite all of the things going on and the poverty and various plagues that were happening, various things, like there was not enough people like dying in like a relatively healthy condition or like being preserved enough or people willing to hand their loved ones' bodies over to the medical schools, because there was also some superstition about that as well. Yeah. And doctors and the surgeons were finding it really difficult to practice without cadavers. So they were allowed to get cadavers under very specific circumstances. And it was basically the law said that they could only be used for medical research if they had died in prison, if they were victims of suicide, or if they were like foundlings and orphans that like nobody claimed. So this, of course, then led to the illegal practice of body snatching, as of course you can imagine. So there's actually like if you walk around Edinburgh, there's various little graveyards and stuff, and they have like a little hut or a little watchtower in them, because they used to have a guard watching over the graves, because people were just trying to rob graves like all the time, like every night, because they need the money. There are these two guys, Burke and Hare. One of them, Hare, he had a lodger who died in his house, and he was like, oh, you know, he asked his friend Burke, he's like, what do you think I should do? Like, do you think they would, if I, do you think I could sell this guy? Like, I'll just say, like, I know him, or he's my real, or something, you know, I'll make up a story, but like, do you think that they would take this guy? And Burke is like, yeah, do it. And they sell the body and they get money. And they're like, oh, that's pretty great. And then someone else comes to stay with Hare. And this lodger has contracts like a really bad fever. And he is concerned that if other people see this lodger with this fever, I think it was a woman. It's a little bit like iffy, some of the details. That he thinks that if they see her in this state, then no other lodgers will come and stay in his house, because, you know, they don't want to contract whatever she has.
Yeah.
So he talks to Burke and they decide to kill her. So they do. And then they sell her body. And now they have a taste for it. So they start they start not just like killing the lodgers, but they start like bringing lodgers in actively, disposing of them. And then, and of course, the surgeons who are getting these are not asking too many questions.
No,
because they're getting
of course not.
But it does become quite obvious by about the 12th person that something's not on the up and up with this. And so they, when they hand the final kind of person over, the lodgers actually discover the body before it can be handed over. And they contact the police, and the police come around, and they do for what that point would have been, I think it was like the 1870s, would have been a pretty decent forensic examination with the knowledge that they had. And they came to the conclusion that they thought she had been suffocated, but they couldn't be sure. So they were obviously concerned. You know, they did a little digging, they found out what had been going on. They were like, okay, with the other circumstantial evidence, we're pretty sure these guys have been just straight up murdering people for a while now. But how do we get them? We have no physical evidence on Hare, who's he had owned the house that the lodgers had been staying in. They couldn't actually tie him physically to anything, even though the lodgers had been in his house. But they thought they could tie Burke, because he had been like slightly more involved physically. So what they did was they did the kind of prisoner's dilemma with him. They offered Hare immunity if he turned on his friend and told them everything, and he did. So in the end, he confessed to 16 deaths. They charged Burke and his wife, but they couldn't prove that the wife had really been part of it, so they kind of acquitted her, but without saying she was innocent, so suspecting that she was probably in on it. And Burke was hanged. They actually displayed his, ironically, they displayed his skeleton at the Anatomical Museum afterwards, where you can go and see it right now. And not only that, but one of the creepiest parts of the story is, and I recently went to the Surgeons Museum with my partner, who's a psychiatrist, and found this really, really interesting, although I have to admit, by like the fourth haul of, you know, limbs in pickled jars, I was like, I'm a bit not hungry anymore. You know, I thought this was really fun, but even I am starting to kind of get like a little nauseous. Anyway, they have his skeleton there, but they also, someone decided, I have no idea why or what possibly brought this up, but someone took some of Burke's skin and made it into like a notebook, like a cover for a notebook. And it's just there. It's next to his death mask, and in a little display case, and it's got a little thing being like, oh yeah, this is made from human skin. And you're like, okay, but like, I have questions.
Right?
Like, who came up with that in the meeting, and who else was like, yeah, you know, well done, Clive, that seems like a great idea. Why don't we just like shave his skin off and make it into a notebook? Like, really? Why did you do this?
Oh,
you already have children. So Yeah, they straight up made a notebook out of a murder, which is a very doctory thing to do, I feel, but also kind of horrible.
Yeah, that's like, I don't know if you've heard of Ed Gein.
Oh,
Yeah, like that's something that like he was notorious for, was just turning a skin into like lampshades and all other sorts of things. So it's like, man, at what point do we draw that line between like this guy's a psychopath and hey, this is science? Like
I mean, I feel like I draw a lot further back than we've turned him into a notebook. You know, okay, sure, he killed 16 people, but, you know, just don't fiddle with him. Like, leave him alone. You know, it's a bit weird. Just like, you know, do your thing, punish him, take his skeleton, you know, and ironically, you know, deal to him essentially the same fate that he dealt to his victims. You know, that's just like poetic justice. I'm fine with that. The notebook thing pushes me a little bit, like, you know, I just feel it's not even a big notebook, it's like kind of pocket size as well. Like, I feel if you're gonna make one, you should at least make like a, you know, like an A4,
right? Something that can be useful. Like,
exactly, make a big old binder or something. Like, he was a massive man, you know, make something of him. So I'm not quite sure why, but it's interesting nonetheless.
That's amazing. I just listened to another podcast that did a bit about body snatching in, I think it was Indiana. And they were talking about, you know, the colleges who basically didn't ask any questions as long as bodies showed up, and some of the lengths that people would go to try to keep their loved ones' bodies from being taken. And it's crazy the things that we will do for money.
There is actually a story, Bill Bryson tells a story in one of his books, and it always amused and horrified me in equal measures. But, you know, Richard Owen, you know, who coined the term dinosaurs, and who was just like a terrible, terrible jerk of a man, who was constantly like stealing other people's titles and pretending that he had all these jobs that like he did not have. And taking credit for other people's work and stealing their specimens. He was just a massive jerk all the time. But he was finding it difficult to get cadavers when he was studying and when he was a medical student. And he would go down to the docks and pay for the bodies of sailors who had recently died, which worked out, you know, reasonably well, and presumably for the captains and stuff, who then didn't have to deal with it. But there is a story of where he was running down cobbled streets on a wet day with the head of a sailor in a bag in his hand, and he slipped and the head came out of the bag and tumbled down the cobblestones and through the open door of a house, at which point he like ran in, sort of wordlessly looked at the family, grabbed the head and ran back out again in the hope that no one would ever. And you've got to wonder, like, what the hell did they think was happening? Like, they're just kind of sitting around the fire having tea, and then suddenly just a head rolls in through your front door, and then a young man comes in, looks at you apologetically, and then runs back out again. No explanation is given. And it horrifies me, but it also amuses me a lot.
Oh, absolutely. Like, if there was ever a sign of the apocalypse, I feel like that would be...
I mean, I'd want an apology, you know, like,
right, something.
I can't imagine that would have been a neat thing, it just bouncing around as well. I'm like, oh, who's gonna clean this? Yeah, us, because it's not gonna be you, you're already running away. I see what's happening here.
At least he was nice enough to go in and get it,
yeah, to retrieve his treasure.
And the smell, that's what always gets me with things. I don't have a strong stomach for smells. And just imagining,
that doesn't sound nice. I recently watched Bones and All, and actually, like, everything else was fine, but there was a degloving scene that I did not enjoy very much in the first few minutes. I had to kind of squint. I'm not too bad with that, with anything other than eye stuff normally. Eye stuff really creeps me out, but everything else is normally not too bad. But you'll notice that, you know, if you ever read my work, there's I don't do eye stuff. Is it Richard Owen with a head?
Oh my goodness. What?
Hang on just 1 second.
Love him to death.
But the tiniest noise. He sounds so brave, but he's like the world's biggest chicken.
Oh, bless.
We had thunderstorms. What's today? Saturday. Thursday. And they were pretty bad for most of the day. And he just like laid there shaking like all day.
Oh, we laughed.
I was like, it's okay. The noise isn't gonna get you.
I mean, just because it hasn't got us so far doesn't mean it's not going to get us. That's what thunderstorms want you to think. They're like, oh, are you like comfortable? Do you like, you know, are you feeling safe, a little off guard? That's when we're going to strike.
Let's lull you into a false sense of security first. Mm-hmm.
Doing it for a couple of thousand years. You're almost fine. Time.
You're fine. He'll do it in the middle of the night sometimes. And I'm like, is this going to be the night that I find out whether or not ghosts are real? Like, what is he barking at? Like, I don't like this. But living in kind of city, there's usually enough noise somewhere that if he really wants to throw a fit, he'll throw a fit.
Plus.
Okay. Yeah, so heads rolling into living rooms.
Totally normal, totally fine. That's why I live on the third floor. Nobody can roll ahead through my door. They do it intentionally. If they really want to roll ahead through my door.
I was gonna say, if there's one that rolls in, you know that it was very specifically intended to roll through your door.
Exactly. I will treat it like the warning it definitely is.
Now, some of these places, like, have they been turned into, well, you said the one is a pub. Is there like any kind of museum or anything like that, like with the lodging house or something where they've kind of marked the location?
I'm not sure like it's physically marked, but there's lots of ghost tours that you can go on here. The most famous ones tend to be things like Mary King's Close, which is like a close is like what we would call an alley. And there's like lots of in the old town. There's basically it's almost like kind of catacombs, like almost part of a city built underneath the city. So like Edinburgh was kind of built on top of some other things, and they take you down into like the South Vaults, which is quite spooky. And like basically when Edinburgh was starting to be kind of built up, and also during the Irish potato famine, a lot of refugees came over from Ireland, and that made an already pretty crowded place even more crowded. And obviously if you were fleeing another country that was having, you know, that kind of issue, you weren't coming with lots of money. So, you know, the poor were very much clumped together in these areas, and some pretty terrible things happened in the dark there. I know people like to push this the narrative that Burke and Hare actually went searching for their victims in the South Vaults. I don't think that's true. I don't think they would have had to, you know, because they were already getting lodgers and stuff. But like, some you could quite easily, I think, have murdered a few people down there, and I don't think anyone would have noticed, really. The quarters were so very cramped, and there were so many people. And also, you know, I think there were points where plague kind of ripped through the areas as well. So it was very much like certain sections of Edinburgh society would not have gone anywhere near the place.
Oof.
You know, so it was kind of a slum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's anything underground or feeling like a tunnel or anything like that, just from the start, I don't care what it's used for or anything else, it's going to creep me out regardless.
Yeah, it's not a comfortable place. It's definitely like, and it's worse when you know, it's not high ceilinged, it's quite low, everything's quite squat, it's basically just cavern after cavern. It almost looks like just a bunch of old wine cellars, you know, it's got that kind of feel to it. And it's horrible when you imagine like actually this used to be full of people, poor people who had nowhere else to go, and were probably mostly starving. Had no like toilet facilities, like would have had like no proper beds, a very little ways to earn money, you know, it would have been like a very squalid place to live.
No sense of cleanliness at all, because how do you with that many people?
Exactly.
Oh yeah, that's horrible. I can definitely see where somewhere like that would be haunted. So weird.
If there's anywhere, then it would definitely be the place where horrible things happen over and over and over. Yeah, right? I would imagine. Yeah.
Have you done a lot of these tours?
Yeah, I've done some of them over the years. You get to kind of know the city. There's all these little weird places in Edinburgh where you can kind of go. I've been living here for about almost 20 years now, actually. I grew up in West Lothian, and I moved to Edinburgh when I was 17. So I like to think I know it pretty well, but there's always something that surprises you about Edinburgh. You can turn a corner and think, I actually don't know this street, or wait, when the hell did that happen? Or didn't it used to be something else? And there's some things that are always there. We have some pretty funny place names as well that always crack me up. There's Dick Place, which really amuses me as a street name. And sometimes I make a detour to walk by it just to be like, there it is. But yeah.
So worth it.
Yeah, totally, always worth it. 100%. No regrets. But yeah, I have to say, it's a beautiful place. It can seem, quite spooky, but also ethereal and beautiful. And it's undergone a lot over the years. And the castle, everything is kind of surrounding the castle. So the castle itself on a moonlit night looks sort of beautiful, but also kind of terrifying in a way. It's not your traditional fairy tale castle with turrets. It looks like it was built to withstand a horde, which it was. So it's it is your functional castle kind of thing. It's not pretty. It was never designed to be pretty. It was designed to work. Yeah. It's not screwing around. It means business. Which I like, but it also having it kind of silhouetted against the moon makes it look a bit terrifying. Dracula would probably be quite at home there, kind of thing.
I want to visit over there so badly. I love castles, all shapes, sizes, state of
condition. Oh, we have so many you should come. Oh. As Terry Pratchett says, there are so many castles, you can't move for remote castles here. they're just everywhere. My fiance is American and she loves castles. Uh-huh. So we've gone to most of the local ones, and every now and again I'm like, oh, this other, and she's like, another. I'm like, there's so many. There's so many castles. We had nothing to do. We just built castles and farmed for a while and tried to fight the English quite badly. And that was all we did for hundreds of years. Oh yeah, and all the all the things we contributed to the world, of course. But that came a little later.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. All the castles, and I just I don't know, I feel like that alone, of course, because we don't have things like that here. Definitely without that level of history. So I particularly, not that I don't enjoy hearing stories from around here too, because there are, but I particularly enjoy everything overseas that's had longer time to develop. And
they're so old, they're 1,000 years old. Everything is just, even when you kind of walk down a main street, compared to New York, where my partner was living before, where we met, where everything is it's 50 years old, wow, so old, let's preserve it or maybe tear it down. And I'm like, oh, 50 years,
right?
That's that's, I'm living in a 300 year old building, and I'm like, oh, it's still good, nothing more. Still good, still fine. This has been a new thing. It's barely a baby, it's grand.
And it's already falling apart.
Yeah, so it's kind of crazy. I think the saying holds true that in Britain, 100 miles is a long way, and in America, 100 years is a long time. Yeah. So yeah, that feels very true, because people will always be like, oh, it's so old, it's from the 80s. I'm like, what? I'm from the 80s, don't say that. no, Liz, I'm uncomfortable with that.
I take offense at that.
Please don't knock me down and build a new car park here or a Starbucks.
I locked my keys in my car at the gym the other night, and it's something I don't know if I've just been super stressed the last couple of months, but the entire time I've been driving, I had done it once until the last couple of months, and I've done it 3 times.
Oh no. Okay.
So I went I went back into the gym to ask, like, check the areas I had been in and ask the girl if anybody had brought keys up to the front, hoping that maybe I had just dropped them inside and they weren't in my car. And I didn't even think about it. And I was like, yeah, you know, I've been driving for almost 2 decades now, and I've only ever done this once. And now all of a sudden I've done this 3 times. And she was like, 2 decades? How old are you? Cause she looked like she was like 19. Mm-hmm. I was like, I just turned 35. And she's like, oh my gosh, I thought you were like 22. And I was like, oh, I love you.
So nice. You do look young though, you do. And I'm 37. So mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, I think there's a certain point if you hit your mid 30s and you have good genes, everyone's like, I cannot comprehend your face anymore. Like, right? I cannot comprehend.
There's no interpretation happening. Yeah. I am pretty fortunate. Like my great-grandmother, she'll be 94 or 95. And she looks amazing. Like, she still lives on her own for most of the year and everything mm-hmm. else. So I'm like, maybe I'll get a little lucky. But also, I try to act immature enough that it balances out. So
yeah, exactly. My great-grandmother was actually almost 102 when she passed. Yeah, and she looked so good for her age. She actually looked better at like 101 than she did at 70. We were joking that she was Benjamin Buttoning herself. We were like, come on. And at one point, one of the carers, and she also lived by herself pretty much, like up until right until the very end, the last 6 weeks of her life. Uh-huh. And the carers once asked her, you know, Jean, how do you look so good? Like, how do you look? How do you stay so young? And my quite prim grandma, in her very beautiful, like, little Scottish brogue, was like, Johnson's baby lotion and porridge hen. And I had to sort of be like, I don't think she means together, but those are both separately good things. Please don't add them together. But like, yeah, she always smelled like Johnson's baby lotion.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe that's the cure to like immortality. It's just like slathering yourself, never mind the blood of virgins or acid milk, but just like a bath full of Johnson's baby lotion.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's, did you watch Cabinet of Curiosities on Netflix?
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. No, I've been, I'm so behind on my TV watching.
Oh goodness. Oh, that's right. Cause you just started a PhD, right?
I did. I have begun the madness.
Oh goodness. Yeah, it'll be a while before you get caught up then.
Yeah, I figure actually if I do all my catching up now, then I can do my freaking out for the last 2 years of it.
Oh, that's true.
But I did get my my student card through the mail, and for a second I thought that I was looking at the expiry date and I was thinking, oh man, like haha, they've made a mistake, because it said the 31st of December 2025. Oh. And I'm like, oh, that's only 2 years, like that. And then I was like, no, Linz, that's three. Oh no, I don't like how close that seems, actually. That seems really close to me. Why would you phrase it like that? So I was fine up until that point, and then I had the fear of God put into me at that moment. Just looking at this card going, yeah, that's actually a lot closer than I thought it was somehow. Oh. So yeah, I'm excited to do it though. I'm really excited. It's gonna be fun. I have no idea how I'm gonna juggle all the things that I do, but it's
they find a way to fit in. When I graduated high school, one of my favorite teachers had retired and he came back for our graduation, and he was like, you know, you're going to get a lot of advice from a lot of people and you're going to forget the majority of it. He's like, but if there's one thing you hear that you do not forget, it's that the older you get, the faster time goes.
And oh, so of course,
of course, we're just like, oh, yeah, okay. And now I'm like, I was 30 yesterday and now I'm 35. Like,
and also, like, we were just talking about this, like, I feel like COVID stole a lot of time from us as well. Like, it sort of made time stand still, but it also seemed, you know, and it also made everything feel like it lasted a decade. Like, I actually feel like I'm in my 40s because everything was just so stretched out. But at the same time, you know, we didn't really do anything for years. So we were all kind of just in the same place. It was a very strange thing to go through, I think. Yeah. I think like my experience of time is no longer quite right. It's a little bit off. You know, it's like a battery that's just not, it like missed a couple of beats and now it's just not quite there.
That is an excellent way to describe it. Like I work in law enforcement, so I was considered essential. So I was still going to work and everything, but because there were so fewer things happening, like even still kind of being in my usual routine, it still just didn't feel right. Yeah. So yeah, it definitely just kind of threw everything off. And you think something was like, oh, that was just a couple years ago, and you're like, oh wait, no, 2020 was in there too, like
yeah, it's just very weird, and it's thrown off my whole experience of time, because we bought a house last year because our landlord was selling our flat and was like, do you want to buy it? We were like, well, we were going to do this at some point. We hadn't expected to do it now, but you're kind of forcing our hand, so I guess we will. And then that was that sort of threw a lot of my plans out of whack, because I had been saving to do a PhD, and then suddenly we were buying a house and I no longer had money. So I was like, okay, so I picked up some extra jobs, but that meant I kind of worked like 15 hours a day every day for like the next 6 months. And so when my partner said things to me like, oh, we should go to such and such a place, I was like, we were just there. And she's like, that was last year. You know, my God, that was 14 months ago. And I'm like, no, you're lying. I don't understand. Where does my life go? She's like, you've done nothing but work for 6 months. So yeah, it's been a very weird workaholic time for me as well. So I feel like that didn't help, because I was on my own during COVID. We were separated, like, we were apart at the time. She was in New York and I was here. Oh, and no. We couldn't fly to see each other for 7 months. That was really difficult. Oh. And so I was just on my own. And that was when my workaholic tendencies really kicked in, because there was no one to stop me from working all the time. So
right,
just writing all the time. So
yeah. And of course, New York, because I'm originally from New York State, just further upstate. And a lot of my family is still there. So being in the South, regulations in New York were way more stringent than they were down here. So it was tough. Even once things kind of started to open up again, if somebody was going to come down, you know, they had to have a test 3 days before they left. They had to have a test 3 days before they came back, 3 days after they got back there. And it was just, it was crazy how complicated it was for a while, until they finally kind of opened everything back up. But
yeah,
that was it was a mess. It's like, you're 12 hours away, but normally that's just a day's drive. But yeah, it was trying to think. Well, my grandmother actually passed December of 2020. She got COVID. Some of my family came down from that, and I have an aunt and uncle that live in Japan, so they happened to be home for that. And of course, they had like a mandatory 2-week quarantine when they got back to Japan. So it was fascinating to hear how everyone handled everything so differently.
Yeah,
different places. It was just like black and white, and
we were pretty locked down here in Scotland, and they were a little more cautious about opening things up and doing things than the English were. I think the Scottish government wanted to kind of put their own stamp on things, and they were a little more likely to go, well, hey, actually, we don't know if the science backs that up. We would rather just wait and be cautious, rather than just kind of bow to public opinion. We'd rather keep you alive so that you can complain at us than and not complaining at us. So, you know, which I appreciate.
Oh, so Selkies, now does that extend into Irish too? Because I feel like I've heard some kind of version of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover there as well. Like the words used sometimes are a little bit different, or the pronunciations are different, and like Irish versus like the Scottish Gaelic. There's also one of my favorite myths. There is an Irish sort of version of this, but I find that the comparison between the two things really funny. So for the Irish, there's the banshee. And the banshee, like, is a woman who like goes screaming through the house, you know, the night before someone dies. And so if you hear it, you know someone's gonna die. And that sounds appropriately like terrifying and mournful, but also very, very scary. You know, it's like a woman screaming through the house. But the Scottish have something called the Bin Nye, which is like the washerwoman. And you see her somewhere near a stream or a river washing the blood out of someone's clothes who's gonna die. And I'm like, and she's weeping. And I'm like, it's a little bit more pathetic because you're actually doing her laundry. Like, you're right? Not even scary. You're just kind of there. And, you know, it's a bit sweet, but I'm also like, oh, like, don't be doing laundry, man. Like, someone else's laundry. You gotta just, like, stand up for yourself.
Yeah, they're not going to need, like, those clothes again.
Yeah, I'm like, clearly, you know, who's going to wear them after you wash the blood? Are you wearing them? Are you stealing clothes? There's a lot of this I don't quite understand.
That's why she's so sad. Her entire wardrobe is clothes from dead people. Like,
it is like the worst thrift shop version ever. It's like, but you have to clean them yourself also. You have to clean all the bodily fluids out of them before you can. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I at some point I may be working with a friend on a project that's kind of partly about that, because I think a banshee and a washerwoman living together would be really fun.
Oh, that would be hilarious.
Like a weird buddy comedy. Kind of. Like, well, I'm just going to scream for this guy. Okay, well, I guess I'm going to wash his clothes. You know. I could see that being pretty fun.
And I feel like, too, like, if there isn't somebody who is already sick or frail or anything like that, like, then there's the additional terror of, okay, well, which one of us is it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Who's going to go?
Yeah. You better hope that nobody has the same shirt as you. otherwise, you're like, wait, is that mine? Or, you know, the guy across the street actually has. Can I look at the tag? Because I'm medium and he's XL. And I just want to make sure that, okay. I don't want to take any risks at the pub, you know?
Right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That is kind of, it is a little, like, kind of pitiful. Like, no. But
right, like, I'm like, could you not just scream a bit?
You know, it's okay to be angry. It's okay.
Scream, just even like a howl, a moan. We would take a moan, not just crying silently. You know, just put a bit of your heart into it. You know, a bit of gumption,
a little bit of emotion. Give us something.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's, and I have to ask this because I feel like it's probably one of the most ridiculous things ever. How many people show up and are just like, have you seen the Loch Ness Monster? Is that...
I don't think anyone's actually ever asked me that seriously. Oh,
that makes me feel better.
I kind of want them to, though, because... I mean, yeah, the Loch Ness Monster is one of those things where it's like, you know, are we arguing that... Even if it was like a mosasaur or a plesiosaur, are we arguing that something that we think died out about 65 million years ago has survived by asexually reproducing in a freshwater loch that is frankly not that big for 65 million? Like, do you see where I'm going with this, you guys? Like, I don't want to crush your dreams, but I feel like the science is not with you on this, you know? I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's probably a bunch of otters who thought it was really funny to just kind of, like, shadow puppet their way through something. It's probably not, though. Like, I wish that was true. It would be really cool to have, you know, a big monster living in a loch. Like, think of the things we could do if, you know, we had some sort of the Scottish version of Godzilla that actually just lives in the loch and never goes anywhere and never terrorizes anybody. Again, you can see how all the Scottish myths are just very slightly like, it never goes to a town and wrecks it. It just kind of lives in the loch, you know.
That's all right. Not disturbing anything.
We're just you know, minding our own business, just doing our thing. We don't want to be a bother.
If there were at least, like, people being grabbed out of boats or something, you know, some kind of malicious intentional behavior, but to just kind of be hanging out, chilling.
Exactly. I mean, I have managed to successfully convince people that you know, you can hunt wild haggis on the hills. And the wonderful thing about wild haggis, as opposed to, you know, the battery haggis that obviously they keep and serve in restaurants, is that you know, the haggis, they evolved because Scotland's so hilly, the haggis evolved to have one leg shorter than the other so that they can run properly on hills. But then they can only run one way. So if you really want to catch a haggis, you just have to find out which way they're running, and then you go around the other side of the hill and you catch them that way. They're actually very easy to catch. People have believed it. They're like, oh my god, and what does it look like? I'm like, sort of like a hedgehog but fuzzier, you know. They can be a little bit feral. You can tame them. It does take quite a while. It's great.
What are you doing? That's amazing. Yeah, it's fun. Like my friend's parents live next door, and her dad is like the master of the straight face when he's saying something. So you get to a point where you kind of question everything that comes out of his mouth, because he loves to say things just to mess with people. So you have to take everything with a grain of salt, because you're like, I don't know. I don't know whether or not I should believe what's coming out of your mouth right now.
And I think, like, culturally, like, America doesn't really have that same kind of sarcastic, I'm messing with you thing. So I find that, like, the Americans that I know, it takes them a moment to get my humor. Like, it's really dry. It can be quite, like, sarcastic in a way. And sometimes they're like, really? Oh, wait, you are kidding. And I'm like, yes, I am. It took you a moment to get there. There's always that kind of like, oh, you're kidding, but with the undercurrent of sometimes my partner actually says this, but the others don't. They just look at me with her eyes. She's like, but why would you? And I'm like, I don't know. I just thought it would be funny. To us, like, that kind of joking is how we show affection. Yeah. We just make fun of each other all the time, and we like do absolutely. This like puppies roughhousing. I'm like, I don't know, this is my puppy roughhouse. Like, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
And I kind of always, no offense to my friends here, of course, or anything, but I always make jokes about like asking dumb American questions, mm-hmm. because I feel like we focus so little on the rest of the world around us when it comes to like our education and everything. So, you know, most of what we get is like what we see on TV, and, you know, some of us, thankfully me included, are lucky enough to meet and interact with people from other places. Mm-hmm. So I'm always like, okay, I have a dumb American question. Like, this is going to sound ridiculous, but the only way I'm going to know the truth is if I ask you. So I'm always like,
I mean, if you preface things with that, it will endear you to people much more. You know, people will be like, ah, this, you're being self-effacing. We find this funny. yes, you are actually one of us, an honorary one. Because, we do, like, we make fun of ourselves a lot. And that's, it's kind of, it's like a whole different dry kind of humor. But yeah, I it does feel, you know, it's such a big place as well. It's difficult. And like, I know that a lot of Americans have also not got passports or not been out of the country. And, you know, the news that you have access to, like on television and stuff, is not geared towards the rest of the country. You know, it's difficult for someone coming from, you know, like a country like Scotland, which people know of, but they only will know like three things about it, and they will frequently call you British, but then they will do English accents like Hugh Grant, and I'm like, you mean English, don't say British when you mean English. But then they will also just straight up just call you European, as if it's like a weird blanket thing, and we're like, what? Like, Europe's so many places. They'll be like, oh, that's so European, and I'm like, so Spanish or Latvian? Like, these are very
I need you to narrow that down just a little bit more.
Like, a lot of different things it could. It's not like a state. Like, they're all actual different countries with different languages. Like, I could say a full sentence in Scots, like just the dialect, not even like Gaelic, and it would be damn near incomprehensible to anybody, including the English, probably, actually, as well. But like, I'm like, you know, there are such cultural differences between different things. It's really bizarre when we hear ourselves being like lumped together like that. It's very odd, you know, because it's like, it's not necessarily a done with like a negative connotation. I hear people saying like, oh, Europeans are so fashionable, and I'm like, I mean, I can certainly think of a couple of countries where I'm like, if you like tracksuits, sure, and flammable material, but like I would not have necessarily said that was the fashion center of the world. But like, yeah, it's a weird clumping together. Whereas, yeah, it's kind of hard to kind of pick that apart sometimes. Mm. And also Scotland does kind of get lumped in with the others. It's like, oh, that funny one where they have funny accents and Outlander. And I'm like, oh, good God. Okay. It's Outlander and Groundskeeper Willie and maybe that Christmas film we all saw last year. Yeah.
It's ironic that that happens because really, like, just the U.S. itself, people are, I mean, we might, okay, I say we speak the same language, but, mm-hmm. you know, there are a lot of people here who grew up speaking English and still don't even have a handle on that. so, in the nicest of ways, mm-hmm. I live in one of those areas. but it's, because I've lived in New York and California and now Tennessee. And even though the entire thing may be America, it's so different from place to place. And there's definitely not a huge appreciation for that, especially if people don't ever bother to get out and see much of anything. So I think it's easy to lump everything into one category when there's nothing wrong with being completely content living in your little corner and, mm-hmm. you know, doing what you want to do and everything. It's just when people kind of start to like generalize everything based on their experience in their little corner of mm-hmm. the world. And that's, I feel like, is where most of the misconceptions and confusion and all that good stuff comes from.
Yeah, so I agree.
I just feel like it's safer to be like, I'm a dumb American. Help me. Tell me things.
I mean, honestly, the best thing you can do is just pretend you're Canadian. We won't know the difference. Everyone likes a Canadian.
Right? They're always so nice. Mm-hmm. Throw a couple of A's in there while I talk. And that was fun, like, growing up in New York, so close to the Canadian border. You know, their coins worked in our vending machines and stuff like that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So then I like went to California and realized that that wasn't a thing everywhere else. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, well, okay. You just so used to it. You just don't even think twice about it until you're.
Wow, that's wild, actually.
Yeah. It was not a big surprise to find like a Canadian quarter mixed in with our change like here and there. So
that's crazy.
I only ever got to go once when I was like 13. So.
I've always wanted to go. I have a couple of friends who live there. It's definitely on the bucket list whenever we have time, I think.
And it's my struggle is that I know it's so much colder there than it is here. But seeing like some of the national parks and, mm-hmm. and pictures of that, it's so beautiful up there. So I feel like I'm just going to have to suck it up at some point and put a couple extra layers on and
get a down jacket, you know, get some thick socks, you're good.
Right.
Yeah.
So
actually that was one of the reasons that one of the things that when I was in New York for the first time, I was at a conference, like a writer's conference. Hmm. And I, in Edinburgh, on a night out, you will see mostly like Russians and Eastern Europeans walking around in the dead of winter in t-shirts because where they're from, you know, that would still be pretty warm. Yeah. And I was like, oh, this is so crazy. That's wild. And then I came to New York and it was, for me, it was really warm. And I remember sitting in a conference room with this group of other writers and the person who was leading the group and realizing that everyone around me, including the men, all had their jackets on and zipped up. And I was sitting there in a t-shirt and they were all looking at me like I was crazy. And I remember saying, are you guys cold? And they were like, it's so cold in here. I'm like, oh, this is like a nice summer day for me. I'm like, oh, I'm toasty, you know, are you sure? Wow, it's like so temperate. and I realized then I was one of those Russian dudes. And I felt very hardcore for about a minute.
I get that a lot being here because it gets cold and I'm one of the first people to like zip up and throw an extra hoodie on, make sure I have an extra shirt on underneath it. And I take a blanket with me to work year round. As soon
in
as it
Tennessee.
Gets, oh yeah. As soon as it gets warm outside, like when summer starts coming through, the temperature that most places set the air conditioning to is like frigid. I'm like, you guys complained about it being cold all winter, but now you're going to freeze us out inside.
Yeah. The place that I was in, it was the air conditioning that was blasting, but even still for me, that was still warm considering. And I was like, oh, but it, like outside it was, you know, if I had stood on the pavement for more than 30 seconds, I think I would have melted into a puddle and just dripped down the nearest sewer. But like, it's crazy the difference in temperature.
Yeah. They're like, oh, but you're from New York. And I'm like, yeah, but if I liked it, I'd still live there. I'm in Tennessee now.
Yeah. That's I do like the heat, I have to say. Maybe I was born in the wrong place.
It is wonderful. So with kind of the stories that circulate and everything, is there one in particular, like, or any in particular as a kid that you remember being pretty terrifying?
I mean, there's a ghostly, I particularly don't like bagpipes. Kevin Bridges, who's one of our wonderful comedians, once said that bagpipes bridge the gap between music and noise. And I both agree and think that also that's a gap that nobody asked to be bridged. leave it. Why did you bridge it? And I really hate the sound of bagpipes. It's really annoying. I think we're going to end up having them at our wedding. So, you know, it will be both the best and worst day of my life. Yeah, thank you. So there's actually an Edinburgh castle in the vaults. It is said that there is a ghostly piper who plays sometimes very deep in the vaults. And to me, that sounds just absolutely awful. You know, I'm like, no, as if it's bad enough that they exist, but without somebody following you, a ghost following you around playing them at you. There's actually like a real piper who stands outside the main train station. And I remember one day I was walking past, because he basically busks for tourists, if you can call that busking. And he was playing something. And I thought, I'm really doing my best not to listen to what this noise is, but the melody is weirdly recognizable and I can't think where it's from. So despite myself, I started listening. And it took me about the time to cross the road and almost get into the train station before I realized it was Coldplay's Yellow on bagpipes. And I thought, you know what? I hate you. I'm almost tempted to go back and yell at you, because just when I thought you couldn't make bagpipes any worse, you're playing bloody Coldplay on them. Like, are you personally attacking me? It's so offensive to my people. I'm also worried that the bagpiper would be playing like Nickelback or something. I would just be like, whatever the song is that I don't know is my least favorite song in the world, I would find it. I think the piper would begin to play it.
And they would follow you around and make sure you heard it
for the rest of your life.
Oh, that would be horrible. I can't even.
I live in fear.
I'm trying to think. Like, I know once in a while at parades growing up, I feel like there would usually be one group in there somewhere that would be playing bagpipes. Mm-hmm. And it is a very unique sound.
It is like someone stepping on a cat a lot. As my cat walks in the room and just looks at me, look, I didn't mean you, okay? That I didn't mean that.
They take offense to that.
It is hearsay. You can't prove anything.
I did not make that sound. That's fantastic. Yeah, I want to reach out. There's a couple people I'd like to talk to. That have had like a Native American upbringing and everything, and I definitely would like to hear some of those stories as well, because I mean, if there is history here, that's where it's at, and I feel like so much of that gets kind of brushed over, or you know, somebody decides to make a movie about something and all of a sudden everybody else is an expert and you know, have all the details wrong. And all of that. So,
well, before I forget, there is there's a movie that everyone kind of knows, and based on the book that everyone kind of knows, The Da Vinci Code, which you probably read and or seen, because I feel like it was a big cultural phenomenon at some point.
What?
So part of The Da Vinci Code was filmed in Roslyn Chapel, which is just outside Edinburgh. And there is an interesting story in Roslyn Chapel about there are certain pillars that are carved at the very front of the chapel, and one of them is like the master pillar that was carved by the master at the time, and one of them is called the apprentice pillar. And so basically the story is that the master had sent the apprentice, he was like, you can carve this pillar, I'm gonna go off to Rome or wherever it was and study some things and for a year, and I will be back. And when he came back, he saw that the apprentice had carved a pillar more beautiful than his, and he murdered him right there in the chapel
Oh, the
out of
nerve.
jealousy.
Oh.
I'm like, you could have just, knocked it down or sanded it or something, but like
Right.
go that route, sure, why not? So I always think that's quite an interesting, like, just a moment of pure jealousy and rage. And also not a good idea to kill someone in a chapel as well. I feel like that's pretty frowned upon.
Yeah, that's instant damnation right
Yeah.
there.
Like, the door's not actually that far away.
Right.
It's
That's
a forest outside, you could have done it there, but like, nope, jealousy demanded right there and
of all the
then.
places to haunt,
Mm-hmm.
it'd have to be a church. Now, how rampant are stories of like vampires and that sort of thing up there?
Not really, no.
No.
That's, I feel like, more of a Central or Eastern European thing. Ours are tend to be more like things are in the water, things are in the mist.
Nature oriented.
Yeah, more kind of like nature oriented.
How about aliens?
So sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
No, I can't think that we've really had any aliens. We're quite a practical people. I don't know if you'd get a lot of people believing in that. I think people would be like, nah. They're just dismiss it, I think, is something.
It is funny, like, because those are such huge things over here, I always like to ask and get reactions from people on the other side of the pond. Bigfoot.
No, we don't have that here as well. Probably because the biggest apex predator, some would say is a Tory, but is a badger. A
No.
Tory is a Republican here. But no, it's we only really have badgers, which to be fair are pretty big, but like it's not like a lynx or a bear or anything. So we don't really have anything
That could
kind
be
of.
mistaken for
Yeah.
something that size, but makes
Yeah.
sense. I like kind of more the nature themed stories. I just like the idea of like Mother Nature finding ways to get back. And kind of make a point as to how she feels about things when
Oh
it
yeah, for
comes
sure.
to when it
I
comes
don't
to
know. It's
human
definitely a place where, like the sea, the land, it can kill you.
beings.
If you're not careful, like you can easily get pulled out to sea by currents, or and also the water's freezing, and yeah, it's not necessarily a pleasant place to swim. So I can see why a lot of, and also because of like the centuries of like Vikings and other people coming over, and lots of threats coming from the sea. So I can kind of understand why the mythology leans towards like monsters and horrors coming from those places.
Yeah, that would make sense, definitely. And are Selkies the one that they say if you're in water, they may pull you under and drown
No,
you? Or is that
that's the honestly, it's not Kelpie. Is it Kelpies? Maybe Kelpies.
Sure. I know it's something that sounds
I'm like,
similar.
not
Not some
Kelpies,
kind
not something like that. But there's little bog
of.
thingy. I'm trying to think of the name, but I can't quite remember the name. Actually, no, I don't know. Because I'm thinking Kelpies are actually the horse.
Oh, okay.
It's a it appears on land as a horse, and then it like it sort of entices you to ride on its back. When you get on it, like it takes you into the water and drowns you essentially. So I'm thinking I can think of the thing, I just can't. Oh, it's like Morgans, which are more Welsh, I think. Although the Kelpie thing, okay. I mean, it feels weird that we're like, yes, it's a horse and it will drown you, because horses, not the most manipulative animal, not the animal really suited to like drowning somebody, one would think, doesn't have thumbs, you know, a bit tricky. But you know, fair enough, I believe it. If a horse wanted to drown me, it probably could.
Right, where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah, like you know, they can get pretty big, sure, why not. I've ridden on a horse. Like, if it wanted to drown me, I don't think I could do much about it,
right? Mm-hmm. All right, do you have any other ones that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think that's pretty much it, but this has been really fun.
Oh good, I'm glad. I really enjoy this conversation, so I'm always excited when I know it's not miserable for So what work, I can't remember, did you say you had one that had just come out, or one that's getting ready to come out, or both?
Oh, both. So I just had a short story collection come out with Bear Creek Press called Turducken. It is a literary matryoshka of poetry. I think that's, I'm banned from describing it like that. It is a collection of my short work, some published already, some not. Places that it's been published are like Catapult, Pseudopod, Flash Fiction Online. Nice prurate places with good quality people who have judged my work and found it okay. And the rest was completely insane things that Stuart let me put in. Including a series of kind of one-shots about a thruple where one person is not human and can only speak in Philip Pullman plot lines, which makes for a really interesting sex scene at one point. It was very fun. That's to amazing. Write. And I also have a novel, my debut novel, coming out in April with Brigid Skate, and that is called Beast, and it is essentially I was always kind of annoyed at the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast, because I thought it was pretty classist of the witch to like curse everybody in the castle when only this kid had been a brat, and you know, actually that was very discriminatory against the working class. So I thought, well, actually, what if I wrote from the perspective of the butler, who is the hinge between those two worlds, and what if I also said it at the time of the French Revolution, and also what if, you know, I described it to people as, did you ever think while you were watching Downton Abbey, I'd love a nice little bit of murder here right now. Just a spicy little side of murder, just to, you know, liven things up a bit. That's kind of what this book is like. So we follow the butler as he navigates the kind of rising rebellions of the French Revolution, and he tries to keep the one remaining noble of the family alive and not guillotined, to the rising anger of the rest of the servants, who are starting to believe that actually, even though he's a kid, they should probably hand him over. And the longer they don't hand him over, the worse things are going to get for them. And, you know, things become quite heated as the book goes on. And the butler is kind of trying to keep everything from boiling over horribly, and keeps making just all the worst choices that a person could have made in that. And I really like it because I love a morally gray character. I love a character who is completely convinced that what they're doing is super fine and super justified, even though it's clearly not. And it was really fun getting him to a point where the people that I'd let read it up until that point were like, oh god, but you know, he has a point. He has a point, but he really, you know, I mean, well, I can sort of see. And I'm like, yes, that is exactly where I wanted you to be in this moment. Yeah. When he decides to stoop to violence for the first time, I wanted you to go, he does kind of have a point though. I'm not saying I'm on his side, but I'm just kind of like, I want to, that sunk cost fallacy for the reader. It was super fun. I'm really excited for that to come out. And people seem to be enjoying the collection at the moment as well. Which is really
those characters definitely lead to like the best kind of conversation where, you know, there's so many different interpretations of what he should have done or what he could have done. And did he make the right choice? And just to have everybody come together and dish it out over over something like that.
Yeah,
that definitely sounds good. I'll have to get my hands on a copy of that. You said April?
April, yes. I think the pre-order link is coming soon. So I'm pretty excited. The collection did pretty well. So if we did like even that much or a little bit more, I would be delighted.
Yeah, well, if you would like me to do a review of that, go ahead. If you want to send that over, I'd be more than happy to.
Oh yeah, I would love to. That would be great. Yeah.
Yeah.
They've sent me the final proof of it and it looks really pretty. And they've got like some little like fancy little things going on. So yeah, I can send you that. No problem.
That's awesome. Fantastic. Well, I very much appreciate you taking the time to have a chat, and it was definitely good fun. I very much appreciate that.
Thank you for having me on. This has been so fun. I'm glad I could entertain you with a bunch of, you know, skinned serial killers and
the Notebook,
hanged people who complained about the weather.
Yeah, now that I think about it, like that would be a great twist on that movie that everybody loves so much, like an entirely different version of the Notebook.
Oh no. But also, yeah, no, I could see that. I could see
right.
That.
I feel like that needs to be written now.
Oh dear. I feel like I'm the one to write it. Okay.
With great power comes great responsibility.
And people always forget the last part of that quote is in great fun.
Right? Isn't that the truth? Fantastic. Well, you have a good rest of your night, and I'll give you a heads up before this comes out. It looks like it'll probably be like beginning of March ish
cool,
with what I've got lined up. So yeah, awesome. Thank you so very much.
Brilliant.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.